to keep company with me and Jean-Luc. He bowed, his right fist covering his heart.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Your Eminence.
His throat bobbed as he extended a letter.
But you have a correspondence. A woman just came to the door. She believes a witch will be in West End tonight, sir, near Brindell Park.
I froze. That was where Seeley lived. A woman. The Archbishop frowned and leaned forward, taking the letter. The seal had been pressed into the shape of a rose. He reached into his robes for a thin knife to open it.
Who? I don't know, Your Eminence.
Pink tinged Ansel's cheeks.
She had bright red hair and was very...
He coughed and stared at his boots.
Very beautiful.
The Archbishop's frown deepened as he flicked open the envelope.
It does not do to dwell on earthly beauty, Ansel, he chided, turning his attention to the letter. I expect to see you at confession to...
His eyes widened at whatever he read there. I stepped closer. Sir? He ignored me, eyes still fixed on the page. I took another step toward him, and his head snapped up. He blinked rapidly.
I...
He shook his head and cleared his throat, turning his gaze back to the letter.
Sir?
I repeated. At the sound of my voice, he lurched to the fireplace and hurled the letter into the flames.
I'm fine,
he snapped, clasping his hands behind his back. They trembled.
Do not worry yourself.
But I did worry. I knew the Archbishop better than anyone, and he didn't shake. I stared into the fireplace, where the letter disintegrated into black ash. My hands curled into fists. If a witch had targeted Seeley like Philippa, I would rip it limb from limb. It would beg for the flames before I finished with it. As if sensing my gaze, the Archbishop turned to look at me.
Assemble a team, Captain Diggory.
His voice was steadier now, steelier. His gaze flicked back to the fireplace, and his expression hardened.
Though I sincerely doubt the validity of this woman's claim, we must uphold our vows. Search the area. Report back immediately.
I placed a fist over my heart, bowed, and moved toward the door, but his hand snaked out and caught my arm. It no longer trembled.
If a witch is indeed in West End, bring it back alive.
Nodding, I bowed once more, resolute. A witch didn't need all its limbs to continue living. It didn't even need its head. Until burned, witches could reanimate. I'd break none of the Archbishop's rules, and if bringing back a witch alive would ease the Archbishop's sudden distress, I would bring back three. For him, for Seeley, for me. Consider it done.
The Heist. Lou. We hastily donned our costumes in Soleil et Lune that night. Our safe haven and haunt, the theater's attic provided an endless repository of disguises. Gowns, cloaks, wigs, shoes, and even undergarments of every size, shape, and color. Tonight, Boz and I strolled in the moonlight as a young couple in love, clothed in the rich, sumptuous fabrics of aristocrats, while Coco trailed behind as an escort. I snuggled into his sinewy arm and cast him an adoring look.
Thank you for helping us.
Ah, oh, Louis, you know how I dislike that word. Help implies I'm doing you a favor.
I smirked, rolling my eyes. God forbid you do anything from the goodness of your heart.
There is no goodness in my heart.
Winking roguishly, Boz pulled me closer and leaned down to whisper in my ear. His breath was too warm against my neck.
Only gold. Right.
I elbowed him in a seemingly innocent gesture and shifted away. After the nightmarish parade, we'd spent the greater part of the afternoon plotting our way through Tremblay's defenses, which we'd confirmed after a quick jaunt past his townhouse. Boz's cousin lived near Tremblay, so hopefully our presence hadn't roused suspicion. It had been just as Boz described, a gated lawn with guard rotations every 5 minutes. He assured me additional guards would be posted inside, as well as dogs trained to kill. Though Tremblay's staff would probably be asleep when we forced entry, They were an additional variable over which we had no control. And then there was the matter of locating the actual vault, a feat that could take days, let alone the few hours before Tremblay returned home. Swallowing hard, I fidgeted with my wig, blonde and piled high with pomade, and readjusted the velvet ribbon at my throat. Sensing my anxiety, Coco touched her hand to my back. "Don't be nervous, Lou. You'll be fine. The Brindel trees will mask the magic." I nodded and forced a smile. "Right. I know." We lapsed into silence as we turned onto Tremblay's street, and the ethereal, spindly trees of Brindel Park glowed softly beside us. Hundreds of years ago, the trees had served as a sacred grove to my ancestors. When the church had seized control of Belterra, however, officials had attempted to burn them to the ground, and failed spectacularly. The trees had regrown with a vengeance. Within days, they'd towered above the land once more, and settlers had been forced to build around them. Their magic still reverberated through the ground beneath my feet, ancient and unchanged. After a moment, Coco sighed and touched my back again, almost reluctantly. "But you do need to be careful." Boz whipped his head around to face her, brows furrowing.
"Excuse you?"
She ignored him. "There's something waiting for you at Tremblay's. It might be the ring, but it might be something else. I can't see it properly." "What?" I lurched to a halt, spinning to face her. "What do you mean?" She fixed me with a pained expression. "I told you, I can't see it. It's all hazy and unsettled, but something is definitely there." She paused, tilting her head as she considered me, or rather as she considered something I couldn't see. Something warm and wet and flowing just beneath my skin. "It could be malevolent, but I don't think whatever it is will harm you. It's definitely powerful, though." "Why didn't you tell me this before?" "Because I couldn't see it before." "Coco, we've been planning this all day. I don't make the rules, Lou," she snapped. "All I can see is what your blood shows me." Despite Boz's protests, Coco had insisted on pricking our fingers before we'd left. I hadn't minded. As a Dame Rouge, Coco didn't channel her magic through the land like me and the other Dame Blanche. No, her magic came from within. It came from blood. Boz raked an agitated hand through his hair.
"Perhaps we should have recruited another blood witch to our cause. Babette might have been better suited."
"Like hell," Coco snarled. "We can trust Babette as far as we can throw her," I added. He regarded us curiously.
"Yet you trusted her with knowledge of this critical mission."
I snorted. "Only because we paid her. Plus, she owes me." With a look of disgust, Coco rearranged her cloak against the crisp autumn breeze. I helped her acclimate to Caesarine when she left the Blood Coven, but that was over a year ago. I'm not willing to test her loyalty any further. Boz nodded to them pleasantly, plastering on a smile and speaking through his teeth.
"I suggest we postpone this conversation. I don't fancy being roasted on a spit tonight."
"You wouldn't roast," I muttered as we resumed our stroll. "You're not a witch."
"No,"
he conceded, nodding thoughtfully.
"Though it would be useful. I've always thought it unfair you females get to have all the fun."
Coco kicked a stray pebble at his back. "Because persecution is a real treat." He turned to scowl at her, sucking on the tip of his forefinger where her pinprick was still barely visible.
"Always the victim, aren't you, darling?"
I elbowed him again, harder this time.
"Shut up, Boz."
When he opened his mouth to argue, Coco gave him a feline smile. "Careful. I still have your blood in my system." He looked at her in outrage.
"Only because you forced it from me."
She shrugged, completely unabashed. I needed to see if anything interesting would happen to you tonight.
Well?
Buzz glared at her expectantly.
Will there?
Wouldn't you like to know?
Unbelievable. Pray tell, what was the point of allowing you to suck my blood if you weren't planning on sharing? I've already told you.
She rolled her eyes, feigning boredom and examining a scar on her wrist. I only see snippets, and the future is always shifting. Divination isn't really my forte. Now my aunt, she can see thousands of possibilities with just a taste.
Fascinating. You can't imagine how much I enjoy these cozy little chats, but I'd rather not learn the specifics of divining the future from blood. I'm sure you understand.
You were the one who said it would be useful to be a witch, I pointed out.
I was being chivalrous.
Oh, please. Coco snorted and kicked another pebble at him, grinning when it hit him squarely in the chest. You're the least chivalrous person I know. He glared between us, trying and failing to quell our laughter.
So this is my reward for helping you? Perhaps I should return to my cousins after all.
Oh, shut it, Buzz. I pinched his arm, and he turned his baleful look on me. I stuck my tongue out at him.
You agreed to help us, and it's not like you aren't pocketing your share. Besides, she just had a drop. It'll be out of her system soon. It'd better be.
In response, Coco flicked a finger, and Buzz cursed and jolted as if his pants had caught fire.
That isn't funny.
I laughed anyway. Too soon, Tombly's townhouse loomed before us. Built of pretty pale stone, it loomed over even its richly crafted neighbors, though it gave the distinct impression of opulence gone to seed. Green crept steadily up the foundation, and the wind whipped dead leaves across the gated lawn. Brown hydrangeas and roses dotted the flower beds, beside an outrageously exotic orange tree. The spoils of his black market trade. I wondered if Philippa had liked oranges.
You have the sedative? Buzz whispered to Coco.
She sidled up beside us and nodded, extracting a packet from her cloak.
Good. Are you ready, Lou?
I ignored him and grabbed Coco's arm.
You're sure it won't kill the dogs?
Buzz growled impatiently, but Coco silenced him with another flick of her finger. She nodded once more before touching a sharp fingernail to her forearm. A drop of my blood in the powder for each dog. It's just dried lavender, she added, lifting the packet. It'll make them sleep. I released her arm, nodding.
Right. Let's go.
Raising the hood of my cloak, I stole silently to the wrought iron fence lining the property. Though I couldn't hear their footsteps, I knew the others crept after me, keeping close to the shadows of the hedgerow. The lock on the gate was simple and strong, crafted from the same iron as the fence. I took a deep breath. I could do this. It had been 2 years, but surely, surely I could break one simple lock. As I examined it, a shimmering gold cord drifted up from the ground and wrapped around it. The cord pulsed for only a second before snaking around my forefinger as well, linking us. I sighed in relief, then took a deep breath to steel my nerves. As if sensing my hesitation, two more cords appeared and floated to where Coco and Boz waited, disappearing into each of their chests. I scowled at the fiendish little things.
You can't get something for nothing, you know, a loathsome voice at the back of my head whispered. A break for a break, your bone for the lock, or perhaps your relationship. Nature demands balance. Nature could piss off. Is something wrong?
Buzz edged forward cautiously, his eyes darting between me and the gate, but he couldn't see the golden cords as I did. The patterns existed solely within my mind. I turned to look at him, an insult already rising to my tongue.
You worthless coward. Of course I couldn't love you. You've already fallen in love with yourself. And you're terrible in bed.
With each word, the cord between him and the lock pulsed brighter, but no. I moved before I could reconsider, twisting my forefinger sharply. Pain lanced through my hand. Through clenched teeth, I watched as the cords vanished, returning to the land in a whirl of golden dust. Savage satisfaction stole through me as the lock clicked open in response. I'd done it. The first phase of my job was complete. I didn't pause to celebrate. Instead, I hastily swung the gate open, careful to avoid my forefinger, which now stuck out at an odd angle, and stepped aside. Coco streaked past me toward the front door, Boz following closely behind. Earlier, we'd determined that Tremblay employed 6 guards to patrol the house. 3 would be posted inside, but Boz would see to them. He had quite a skill with knives. I shuddered and crept onto the lawn. My outdoor targets would suffer a much kinder fate, hopefully. Not even a moment had passed before the first guard rounded the townhouse. I didn't bother hiding, instead throwing my hood back and welcoming his gaze. He spotted the open gate first and immediately reached for his sword. Suspicion and panic warred on his face as he scanned the yard for something amiss and spotted me. Sending up a silent prayer, I smiled. "Hello." A dozen voices spoke within my own, and the word came out strange and lovely, amplified by the lingering presence of my ancestors. Their ashes, long absorbed by the land until they were the land, and the air and the trees and the water, thrummed beneath me, through me. My eyes shone brighter than usual. My skin glowed lustrous in the moonlight. A dreamlike expression crossed the man's face as he looked at me, and the hand on his sword relaxed. I beckoned him closer. He obliged, walking toward me as if in a trance. Only a few steps away, he paused, still staring at me. "Will you wait with me?" I asked in the same strange voice. He nodded. His lips parted slightly, and I felt his pulse quicken under my gaze. Singing to me. Sustaining me. We continued staring at one another until the second guard appeared. I flicked my gaze toward him and repeated the whole delicious process. By the time the third guard came around, my skin glowed brighter than the moon. "You've been so kind." I extended my hands to them in supplication. They watched me greedily. "I'm so sorry for what I'm about to do." I closed my eyes, concentrating, and gold exploded behind my eyelids in an infinite, intricate web. I caught one strand and followed it to a memory of Boz's face, to his scar, to the passionate evening we'd spent together. A trade. I clenched my hands into fists, and the memory vanished as the world tilted behind my eyelids. The guards fell to the ground, unconscious. Disoriented, I opened my eyes slowly. The web dissipated. My stomach rolled, and I vomited into the hedge of roses. I probably would have stayed there all night, sweating and puking at the onslaught of my repressed magic, had I not heard the soft whine of Tremblay's dogs. Coco must have found them. Wiping my mouth on my sleeve, I mentally shook myself and crept toward the front door. Tonight was not the night for squeamishness. Silence cloaked the inside of the townhouse. Wherever Boz and Coco had gone, I couldn't hear them. Creeping farther into the foyer, I took stock of my surroundings. The dark walls, the fine furniture, the countless trinkets. Large rugs in tawdry patterns covered mahogany floors, and crystal bowls, tasseled pillows, and velvet poofs littered every surface. All very boring, in my opinion. Cluttered. I longed to rip the heavy curtains from their rods and let in the silver light of the moon.
"Lou!"
Boz's hiss emanated from the stairwell, and I nearly jumped out of my skin. Coco's warning reared to life with terrifying clarity.
There's something waiting for you at Tremblay's.
Quit daydreaming and get up here.
I'm technically night dreaming. Ignoring the chill down my spine, I half sprinted to join him. To my surprise and delight, Baz had found a lever on the frame of a large portrait in Tremblay's study, a young woman with piercing green eyes and pitch-black hair. I touched her face apologetically.
Philippa, how predictable.
Yes.
Baz flicked the lever and the portrait swung outward, revealing the vault behind.
Idiocy is oft mistaken for sentimentality. This is the first place I looked.
He gestured to the lock.
Can you pick it?
I sighed, glancing down at my broken finger. Can't you pick it instead?
Just do it, he said impatiently, and quickly. The guards could wake up any moment.
Right. I shot the golden cord spreading between myself and the lock a nasty look before going to work. It appeared quicker this time, as if waiting for me. Though I bit my lip hard enough to draw blood, a small groan still escaped as I snapped a second finger. The lock clicked, and Baz swung the vault open. Inside, Tremblay had stacked a slew of tedious items. Pushing aside his seal, legal documents, letters, and stock, Baz eyed the pile of jewelry beyond them hungrily. Rubies and garnets, mostly, though I spied a particularly attractive diamond necklace. The entire box glittered with the golden couronne lining its walls. I swept it all aside impatiently, heedless of Baz's protests. If Tremblay had been lying, if he didn't have the ring... At the back of the vault lay a small leather album. I tore it open, vaguely recognizing sketches of girls who had to be Philippa and her sister, before a gold ring tumbled out from between the pages. It landed on the carpet without a sound. Unremarkable in every way, except the flickering, nearly indiscernible pulse that tugged at my chest. Breath catching in my throat, I crouched to pick it up. It was warm in my palm. Real. Tears pricked at my eyes, threatening to spill over. Now she'd never find me. I was safe. Or as safe as I'd ever be. On my finger, the ring would dispel enchantments. In my mouth, it would render me invisible. I didn't know why, a quirk of the magic perhaps, or of Angelica herself, but I also didn't care. I'd break my teeth on the metal if it kept me hidden.
Did you find it?
Baz stuffed the last of the jewelry and couronne into his bag and looked at the ring expectantly.
Not much to look at, is it?
Three sharp raps echoed from downstairs. A warning. Baz's eyes narrowed, and he crept to the window to peer out at the lawn. I slipped the ring onto my finger while his back was turned. It seemed to emit a soft sigh at the contact.
Shit!
Baz turned, eyes wild, and all thoughts of the ring fled my mind.
We have company.
I ran to the window. The constabulary swarmed across the lawn toward the manor, but that wasn't what made genuine fear stab at my stomach. No, it was the blue coats that accompanied them. Chasseurs. Shit. Shit, shit, shit. Why were they here? Tremblay, his wife, and his daughter huddled next to the guards I'd left unconscious. I cursed myself for not hiding them somewhere. A clumsy mistake, but I'd been disoriented from the magic. Out of practice. To my horror, one of the guards had already begun to stir. I had little doubt what he would tell the chasseurs when he regained full consciousness. Baz was already moving, slamming the safe shut and hauling the portrait back into place.
Can you get us out?
His eyes were still wide with panic, desperate. We could both hear the constables and chasseurs surrounding the manor. All the exits would soon be blocked. I glanced down at my hands. They were shaking, and not just because of the broken fingers. I was weak, too weak from the exertion of the evening. How would I let myself become so inept? The risk of discovery, I reminded myself. The risk had been too great.
Lou!
Boz grabbed my shoulders and shook me slightly.
Can you get us out?
Tears welled in my eyes. No, I breathed.
I can't.
He blinked, chest rising and falling rapidly. The chasseur shouted something below, but it didn't matter. All that mattered was the decision made in Boz's eyes as we stared at one another.
Right.
He squeezed my shoulders once.
Good luck.
Then he turned and dashed from the room.
A Man's Name. Reed. Tremblay's townhouse reeked of magic. It coated the lawn, clung to the prone guards Tremblay attempted to revive. A tall, middle-aged woman knelt beside him, red-headed, striking. Though I didn't recognize her, my brethren's whispers confirmed my suspicions. Madame La Belle, notorious courtesan and mistress of the Belle Rose. Surely she had no business here.
Captain Diggory.
I turned toward the strained voice behind me. A reedy blonde stood with her hands tightly clasped, an expensive wedding band glinting on her ring finger. Frown lines marred the corners of her eyes, eyes that currently burned holes in the back of Madame La Belle's head. Tremblay's wife.
Hello, Captain Diggory.
Celie's soft voice preceded her as she stepped around her mother. I swallowed hard. She was still clothed in mourning black, her green eyes stark in the torchlight, swollen, red, tears sparkled on her cheeks. I longed to close the distance between us and wipe them away, to wipe this whole nightmarish scene so like the night we'd found Philippa away.
Mademoiselle Tremblay.
I inclined my head instead, keenly aware of my brethren's eyes, of Jean-Luc's.
You look well.
A lie. She looked miserable, afraid. She'd lost weight since I last saw her. Her face was drawn, pinched, as if she hadn't slept in months. I hadn't either.
Thank you.
A small smile at the lie.
You do too.
I apologize for these circumstances, mademoiselle, but I assure you, if a witch is responsible, it will burn. I glanced back at Tremblay. He and Madame La Belle were bent close together, and they appeared to be in harried conversation with the guards. Frowning, I stepped closer. Madame Tremblay cleared her throat and turned her indignant eyes on me.
I assure you, sir, you and your esteemed order are not necessary here. My husband and I are God-fearing citizens, and we do not abide witchcraft.
Beside me, Jean-Luc bowed his head. Of course not, Madame Tremblay. We are here only as a precaution. Though your guards were unconscious, Madame, I pointed out, and your home reeks of magic. Jean-Luc sighed and shot me an irritated look.
It always smells like this here.
Madame Tremblay's eyes narrowed and her lips pressed into a thin line, displeased.
It's that beastly park. It poisons the entire street. If it weren't for the view of the Dolor, we would move tomorrow.
My apologies, madame. All the same, we understand. Jean-Luc stepped in front of me with a placating smile, and we apologize for the alarm. Usually, robberies fall under the constabulary's jurisdiction, but... He hesitated, smile faltering. We received an anonymous tip that a witch would be here tonight. We'll just do a quick sweep of the premises, and you and your family may safely return to your home.
Captain Diggory, Chasseur Toussaint.
The voice that interrupted was warm, smooth, intimate. We turned, as one, to see Madame La Belle striding toward us. Tremblay hurried to follow, leaving the disoriented guards behind.
We've just spoken with the guards, she smiled, revealing bright white teeth. They nearly glowed against her scarlet lips. The poor dears don't remember anything, unfortunately.
If you don't mind me asking, Helene, Madame Tremblay said through clenched teeth, what business do you have here?
Madame La Belle turned to her with polite disinterest.
I was passing and saw a disturbance, of course.
passing. Whatever were you doing in this part of town, dear? One would expect you might have, business to attend to on your own street at this hour of night.
Madame LaBelle arched a brow. You're quite right. Her smile widened, and she glanced at Tremblay before returning his wife's icy stare. I do have business to attend to.
Celie stiffened, bowing her head, and Tremblay hastened to intervene before his wife could respond. You are, of course, welcome to question my staff yourselves, good sirs.
Don't worry, Monsieur Tremblay. We will.
Glaring at him for Celie's sake, I raised my voice to the constabulary and chasseurs. Spread out and form a perimeter. Block all exits. Constables, partner yourselves with the chasseur. If this is a witch, do not allow it to catch you defenseless.
It isn't a witch,
Madame Tremblay insisted, glancing around anxiously. Lights in neighboring townhouses began to flicker on. Already a handful of people had appeared by the broken gate. Some wore nightclothes, others wore finery similar to the Tremblays. All wore familiar, wary expressions.
It's just a thief, that's all.
She stopped abruptly, her eyes flicking toward the townhouse. I followed her gaze to an upstairs window. A curtain moved, and two faces peered out. One of them was familiar, despite the wig. Blue-green eyes, vivid even at a distance, widened in panic. The curtain snapped shut. Satisfaction spread through my chest, and I allowed a grin. Let justice roll on like a river and righteousness like a never-failing stream.
What is it?
Jean-Luc looked toward the window, too.
Justice.
They're still here. A man and a woman. He drew his balisarda with a flourish. I'll dispatch the woman quickly. I frowned, remembering the woman's mustache, her baggy trousers and rolled shirt sleeves and freckles, the way she'd smelled when she'd crashed into me at the parade, like vanilla and cinnamon. Not magic. I shook my head abruptly, but witches didn't always smell evil, only when they'd been practicing. The Archbishop had been clear in our training. Every woman was a potential threat. Even so,
I don't think she's a witch.
Jean-Luc lifted a black brow, nostrils flaring.
No?
Surely it isn't coincidence we received a tip on this particular night before these particular thieves robbed this particular home. Scowling, I looked back at the window.
I met her this morning. She...
I cleared my throat, heat creeping up my cheeks.
She didn't seem like a witch.
The excuse fell flat, even to my own ears. Celie's eyes burned on my neck.
Ah, she can't be a witch because she didn't seem like one. My mistake, of course.
She was wearing a mustache, I muttered. When Jean-Luc scoffed, I resisted the urge to flatten him. He knew Celie was watching.
We can't discount Brindle Park next door. It's possible the man and woman are simply thieves, despite the circumstances. They could deserve prison, not the stake.
Very well, Jean-Luc rolled his eyes and marched toward the door without my order.
Let's hurry this up then, shall we? We'll interrogate the two of them and decide. Prison or the stake?
Gritting my teeth at his insolence, I nodded to the constabulary, and they hurried after him. I didn't follow. Instead, I kept my gaze trained on the window and the rooftop. When she didn't reappear, I crept around the side of the house, waiting. Though Celie's presence was an open flame on my back, I did my best to ignore it. She'd wanted me to focus on the chasseurs. That was what I needed to do. Another moment passed. And another. A small cellar door obscured by hydrangeas flew open to my right. Jean-Luc and a man with amber skin barreled out of it, knives flashing in the moonlight. They rolled once before Jean-Luc landed on top, knife pressed to the man's throat. Three constables burst from the cellar door after them with handcuffs and rope. Within seconds, they had his wrists and ankles bound. He snarled and twisted, shouting a tirade of curses and one other word.
Lou!
He pulled uselessly at his bonds, face purpling with rage. One of the constables moved to gag him.
Lou!
Lou. A man's name. It figured. I continued on, still searching the windows and roofline. Sure enough, I soon spotted a slight shadow moving up the wall, slowly. I looked closer. This time she wore a cloak.
It parted as she climbed, revealing a dress as fine as Madame Tremblay's. Probably stolen. But it wasn't the dress that seemed to cause her problems. It was her hand. Each time it touched the wall, she drew it back sharply, as if in pain. I squinted, trying to locate the source of the problem, but she was too high. Much too high. As if in response to my fear, her foot slipped, and she plummeted several feet before catching herself on a window ledge. My stomach dropped with her.
Oi!
I rushed forward. Footsteps sounded as the chasseurs and constabulary closed in behind me. Jean-Luc shoved the bound man to the ground at my feet.
You're surrounded! We already have your boyfriend! Come down now before you kill yourself!
She slipped and caught herself again. This time, her wig tumbled to the ground, revealing long, brown hair. Inexplicably furious, I lurched forward.
Come down right now!
The man managed to work the gag from his mouth.
Lou, help me!
A constable wrestled to gag him once more. The woman paused at his voice, perching in a window, and glanced down at us. Her face lit with recognition when she saw me, and she lifted her good hand to her forehead in mock salute. I stared at her dumbfounded. She'd actually saluted. My hands curled into fists.
Go up and get her.
Jean-Luc scowled at the command, but he still nodded.
Chasseurs, with me.
My brethren surged forward, drawing their balisardas.
Constables on the ground, don't let her escape.
If the other chasseurs questioned why I remained on the ground, they said nothing, wisely. But that didn't stop the constabulary's curious stares.
What?
I snapped, glaring at them. They hastily resumed staring at the roof.
Was anyone else inside?
After several long seconds, one of them stepped forward. I vaguely recognized him. David.
Yes, Captain Jeffrey, I found someone in the kitchen.
And? Another constable, presumably Jeffrey, cleared his throat. The two shared an anxious look, and Jeffrey swallowed hard. She escaped. I expelled a harsh breath.
We think she's your witch, though,
David added, hopefully.
She smelled like magic, sort of, and she poisoned the dogs. They had blood on their maws, and they smelled strange.
If it helps, she was, well, scarred, Jeffrey said. David nodded earnestly. I turned toward the roof without another word, forcing myself to unclench my fists, to breathe. It wasn't David or Jeffrey's fault. They weren't trained to handle witches, and yet, perhaps they could explain their incompetence to the Archbishop. Perhaps they could accept the punishment, the shame. Another witch free, another witch left to plague the innocent people of Belterra, to plague Seely. Through a haze of red, I trained my eyes on the thief.
Lou. She would tell me where the witch went. I would force the information from her, no matter what it took. I would fix this.
Even with her injured hand, she still managed to outclimb the chasseurs. She reached the roof line before the others had even cleared the first story.
Spread out! I roared to the constabulary.
They scattered at my command.
She has to come down somewhere. That tree, cover it, and the drain pipes. Find anything she could use to make an escape.
I waited, pacing and seething, as my brethren scaled steadily higher. Their voices drifted down to me, threatening her. Good. She consorted with witches. She deserved to fear us.
Any sign?
I called to the constabulary.
Not here, Captain.
Not here either.
None, sir.
I bit back an impatient growl. Finally, after what seemed an eternity, Jean-Luc hoisted himself over the rooftop after her. Three of my brethren followed. I waited. And waited. And waited.
David shouted behind me, and I whirled to see the bound thief halfway to the road. He'd somehow worked his ropes from his feet.
Though the constables sprinted toward him, they'd spread themselves too far across the yard on my orders. Biting back a curse, I leapt after him, but Jean-Luc's shout made me falter.
She's not here!
He appeared back at the roofline, chest heaving. Even from a distance, I could see the anger in his eyes. It matched my own.
She's gone!
With a snarl of frustration, I scanned the street for the man. But he, too, had disappeared.
Angelica's ring. Lou. I could still hear the chasseurs as I sprinted down the street, staring at the place where my feet and my legs and my body should have been. They couldn't understand where I'd gone. I hardly understood it myself. One second, I'd been trapped on the roof, and the next, Angelica's ring had burned hot on my finger. Of course. In my panic, I'd forgotten what the ring could do. Without stopping to think, I'd slid the ring off my finger and stuck it in my mouth. My body had vanished. Climbing up the townhouse with an audience and two broken fingers had been difficult. Climbing down with an audience, two broken fingers, and a ring clenched between my teeth, invisible, had been almost impossible. Twice I'd almost swallowed the thing, and once I'd been certain a chasseur heard me when I torqued my broken fingers. Still, I'd done it. If the chasseurs hadn't thought I was a witch before, if by some miracle the guards hadn't squealed, they certainly suspected it now. I'd need to be careful. The copper-haired chass knew my face, and thanks to Boz's idiocy, he also knew my name. He would search for me. Others far more dangerous might hear and begin searching for me, too. When I was far enough away to feel relatively safe, I spat the ring from my mouth. My body immediately reappeared as I slid it back on my finger. "Neat trick," Coco mused. I whirled at the sound of her voice. She leaned against the dirty brick of the alleyway, eyebrow arched, and nodded to the ring. "I see you found Tremblay's vault." When I glanced toward the street, hesitating, she laughed. "Don't worry. Our muscled blue friends are currently tearing Tremblay's townhouse apart brick by brick. They're far too busy looking for you to actually find you." I chuckled, but stopped quickly, looking back at the ring with awe. I can't believe we actually found it. The witches would riot if they knew I had it. Coco followed my gaze, brows furrowing slightly. "I know what the ring can do, but you've never told me why your kin revere it. Surely there are other objects more, I don't know, powerful." "This is Angelica's ring." She stared at me blankly. "You're a witch." I returned her befuddled stare. "You haven't heard the story of Angelica?" She rolled her eyes. "I'm a red, in case you'd forgotten. Forgive me for not learning your cultic superstitions. Was she a relative of yours or something?" "Well, yes," I said impatiently, "but that's not the point. She was really just a lonely witch who fell in love with a knight." "Sounds dashing." "He was. He gave her this ring as a promise of marriage. Then he died. Angelica was so devastated that her tears flooded the land and created a new sea. L'eau mélancolique, they called it." "The wistful waters." Coco lifted my hand, scorn giving way to grudging admiration as she examined the ring. I slid it off my finger and held it out to her in my palm. She didn't take it. "What a beautiful, terrible name." I nodded grimly. "It's a beautiful, terrible place." When Angelica had cried all her tears, she threw the ring into the waters and herself after it. She drowned. When the ring resurfaced, it was infused with all sorts of magic. Raucous voices sounded from the street, and I stopped talking abruptly. A group of men passed by, singing a pub song loudly and off-key. We shrank farther into the shadows. When their voices faded, I relaxed. "How did you escape?" "Through a window." At my expectant stare, she grinned. "The captain and his minions were too concerned with you to notice me." "Well then." I pursed my lips and leaned against the wall beside her. "I suppose you're welcome. How did you manage to find me?" She lifted her sleeve. A web of scars marred her arms and wrists, and a fresh cut down her forearm still oozed. A mark for every bit of magic she'd ever done. From the little Coco had taught me about Dame Rouge, I knew their blood was a powerful ingredient in most enchantments. But I didn't understand it. Unlike Dame Blanche, they weren't bound to any laws or rules. Their magic didn't demand balance. It could be wild, unpredictable, and some of my kin even called it dangerous. But I'd seen what the Dame Blanche themselves could do. Filthy hypocrites. Coco arched a brow at my appraisal and rubbed some blood between her fingers. Do you really want to know?
I think I can guess.
I sighed and slid down the wall to sit on the street, closing my eyes. She joined me, her leg resting companionably against my own. After a few seconds of silence, she nudged me with her knee, and I forced an eye open. Hers were unnaturally serious. The constabulary saw me, Lou.
What?
I lurched forward, eyes fully open now.
How?
She shrugged. I waited around to make sure you escaped. I was lucky it was the constabulary, really. They nearly pissed down their legs when they realized I was a witch. Made climbing out the window easier.
Shit.
My heart sank miserably.
Then the chasseurs know too. They're probably already looking for you. You need to get out of the city as soon as possible. Tonight. Now. Send word to your aunt. She'll find you.
They'll be looking for you now too. Even if you hadn't disappeared without a trace, they know you've consorted with a witch. She leaned forward and wrapped her arms around her knees, heedless of the blood on her arm. It smeared her skirt red.
What's your plan?
I don't know, I admitted quietly. I have Angelica's ring. It'll have to do.
You need protection.
Sighing, she took my good hand in her own.
Come with me. My aunt will kill me. I won't let her.
She shook her head fiercely, and the curls around her face bobbed. You know how she feels about La Dame de Sorcière. She'd never help the Dame Blanche. I knew better than to argue, instead sighing heavily.
Others might. It would only be a matter of time before one of your covens stabbed me in my sleep, or turned me over to her.
Coco's eyes flashed.
I'd tear out her throat.
I smiled ruefully. It's my own throat I'm worried about.
So what then?
She dropped my hand and pushed to her feet.
You're just going back to Soleil et Lune?
For now. I shrugged as if unconcerned, but the movement felt too stiff to be convincing. No one but Boz knows I live there, and he managed to escape.
I'll stay with you.
No, I won't let you burn for me.
Lou,
no. She huffed impatiently.
Fine, it's your own neck. Just let me mend your fingers at least.
No more magic. Not tonight.
But
Coco. I stood and took her hand gently, tears pricking my eyes. We both knew she was stalling.
I'll be fine. It's just a couple of broken fingers. Go. Take care of yourself.
She sniffed, tipping her face back in a losing effort to contain her tears.
Only if you do.
We hugged briefly, neither of us willing to say goodbye. Goodbyes were final, and we would see each other again someday. Though I didn't know when or where. I would make sure of it. Without another word, she released me and melted into the shadows. I hadn't even left the alley when two large figures stepped in my path. I cursed as they pushed me none too gently into the alley wall. Andre and Gru. Of course. Though I struggled against them, it was pointless. They outweighed me by several hundred pounds.
How you doing, sweet thing?
Andre leered. He was shorter than Gru, with a long, narrow nose and far too many teeth. They crowded his mouth, yellow and chipped and uneven. Gagging at his breath, I leaned away, but Gru buried his nose in my hair.
Mmm, you smell good, Lulu.
I smashed my head into his face in response. His nose crunched and he staggered backward, swearing violently, before lunging for my throat.
You little bitch!
I kicked his knee, simultaneously elbowing Andre in the gut. When his grip loosened, I darted toward the street, but he caught my cloak at the last second. My feet flew out from under me, and I landed on the cobblestones with a painful thud. He kicked me over to my stomach, pinning me there with a boot on my spine.
Give us the ring, Lou.
Though I twisted beneath him to upset his balance, he only pushed harder. Sharp pain radiated up my back. I don't have... He reached down before I could finish, smashing my face into the ground. My nose cracked and blood spurted sickeningly into my mouth. I choked on it, stars bursting in my eyes, and fought to remain conscious.
The constabulary busted us, you asshole!
An unpleasant realization dawned.
Was it you? Did you bastard snitch?
Gru snarled and rose to his feet, still clutching his knee. His bulbous nose bled freely down his chin. Despite the blinding pain, vindictive pleasure stole through me. I knew better than to smirk, but it was hard, so hard to restrain myself.
I no snitch. Search her, Andre.
If you touch me again, I swear I'll rip out your fucking eyes.
I don't think you can issue threats, Lulu.
Andre yanked my hair back, extending my throat, and caressed my jaw with his knife.
And I think I'll take my time searching you, every nook and cranny. You could be hiding it anywhere.
A memory surfaced with crystalline focus. My throat over a basin. Everything white. Then red. I exploded beneath him in a blur of limbs and nails and teeth, clawing and biting and kicking every bit of him I could reach. He stumbled backward with a cry, his blade nicking my chin. But I didn't feel the sting as I swept it aside. Didn't feel anything, the breath in my lungs, the tremble of my hands, the tears on my face. I didn't stop until my fingers found his eyes.
Wait, please!
He forced them closed, but I kept pressing, curling my knuckles beneath the lids and into the sockets.
I'm sorry, I believe you! Stop!
Gru's footsteps pounded behind me.
Stop, or I'll... If you touch me, I'll blind him.
His footsteps stopped abruptly, and I heard him swallow.
You... Just give us something for our silence, Lou. Something for our trouble. I know you pinched more than a ring from that knob.
I don't have to give you anything. Backing toward the street slowly, I kept one hand pressed firmly against Andre's neck. The other remained lodged in his eyeball. With each step, sensation returned to my limbs, to my mind. My broken fingers screamed. I blinked rapidly, swallowing the bile in my throat.
Don't follow me, or I'll finish what I started here.
Gru didn't move. Andre actually whimpered. When I reached the street, I didn't hesitate. Shoving Andre toward Gru's outstretched arms, I turned and fled to Soleil et Lune. I didn't stop to staunch the bleeding or set my fingers until I was safe in the theater's rafters. Though I didn't have any water to wash my face, I smeared the blood around a bit until most of it was on my dress instead of my skin. My fingers were already stiff, but I bit down on my cloak and set the bones anyway, using a piece of boning from a discarded corset as a splint. Though exhausted, I couldn't sleep. Every noise made me flinch, and the attic was too dark. A single broken window, my only means of entry, let in the moonlight. I curled up beneath it and tried to ignore the throbbing in my face and hand. For a brief moment, I contemplated climbing to the roof. I'd spent many nights up there above the city, craving the stars on my cheeks and the wind in my hair. But not tonight. The chasseurs and constabulary were still searching for me. Worse, Coco was gone, and Baz had abandoned me at the first sign of trouble. I closed my eyes in misery. What a rotten mess. At least I'd procured the ring, and she hadn't found me yet. This thought alone gave me enough comfort to eventually drift into an uneasy sleep.
2. Named Wrath and Envy. Read. The clashes of swords filled the training yard. Late morning sun bore down on us, chasing away the autumn chill, and sweat poured from my forehead. Unlike the other chasseurs, I hadn't discarded my shirt. It clung to my chest, wet fabric chafing my skin, punishing me. I'd let another witch escape, too distracted with the freckled thief to realize a demon had been waiting inside. Celie had been devastated. She hadn't been able to look at me when her father finally steered her inside. Heat washed over me at the memory. Another failure. Jean-Luc had been the first to discard his shirt. We'd been sparring for hours, and his brown skin glistened with sweat. Welts covered his chest and arms, one for every time he'd opened his mouth. "Still thinking about your witches, Captain? Or perhaps Mademoiselle Tremblay?" I smashed my wooden sword into his arm in response, blocked his counter-strike, and elbowed him in the stomach, hard. Two more welts joined the others. I hoped they'd bruise. "I'll take that as a yes," doubling over to clutch his stomach. He still managed to smirk up at me. I obviously hadn't hit him hard enough. "I wouldn't worry. Everyone will forget the townhouse fiasco soon." I clenched my sword until my knuckles turned white. A tick started in my jaw. It wouldn't do to attack my oldest friend, even if that friend was a miserable little... "You did save the royal family, after all." He straightened, still clutching his side, and grinned wider. "To be fair, you also humiliated yourself with that witch. I can't say I understand it. Fatherhood isn't particularly my taste, but the thief last night? Now, she was a pretty little thing." I lunged forward, but he blocked my advance, laughing and punching my shoulder. "Peace, Ree. You know I jest." His jests had grown less funny since my promotion. Jean-Luc had arrived on the church's doorstep when we were three. Every memory I had included him in some form or another. Ours had been a joint childhood. We'd shared the same bedroom, the same acquaintances, the same anger. Our respect had also once been mutual. But that was before. I stepped away, and he made a show of wiping my sweat on his pants. A few of our brethren laughed. They stopped abruptly at my expression. "Every jest holds truth." He inclined his head, still grinning, pale green eyes missing nothing. "Perhaps. But does our Lord not command us to lay aside falsehood?" He didn't pause for me to answer. He never did. "Speak truth, each one of you," he says, "for we are members of one another." "I know the scripture." "Then why silence my truth? You talk too much." He laughed harder, opening his mouth to dazzle us with his wit once more, but Ansel interrupted, breathing heavily, sweat matted his unruly hair, and blood flushed his cheeks. "Just because something can be said doesn't mean it should. Besides," he said, risking a glance at me, "Reed wasn't the only one at the parade yesterday, or the townhouse." I stared at the ground resolutely. Ansel should have known better than to intervene. Jean-Luc surveyed the two of us with unabashed interest, sticking his sword in the ground and leaning against it, running his fingers through his beard. "Yes. But he seems to be taking it particularly hard, doesn't he?" "Someone ought to." The words left my mouth before I could stop them. I ground my teeth and turned away before I could do or say anything else I'd regret. "Ah." Jean-Luc's eyes lit up, and he straightened eagerly, sword and beard forgotten. "There's the rub, isn't it? You disappointed the Archbishop. Or was it Celie?" 1, 2, 3. Ansel looked between us nervously. "We all did." "Perhaps." Jean-Luc's smile vanished, and his sharp eyes glinted with an emotion I wouldn't name. "Yet Reed alone is our captain. Reed alone enjoys the privileges of the title. Perhaps it is fair and just for Reed alone to bear the consequences." I threw my sword on the rack. 4, 5, 6. I forced a deep breath, willing the anger in my chest to dissipate. The muscle in my jaw still twitched.
Seven, you are in control. The Archbishop's voice drifted back to me from childhood. This anger cannot govern you, Reed. Breathe deeply. Count to 10. Master yourself.
I complied. Slowly, surely, the tension in my shoulders eased. The heat on my face cooled. My breath came easier. I clasped Jean-Luc's shoulder, and his smile faltered.
You're right, Jean. It was my fault.
I take full responsibility. Before he could respond, the Archbishop stepped into the training yard. His steely eyes found mine, and I immediately fisted my hand over my heart and bowed. The others followed. The Archbishop inclined his head in response.
As you were, chasseurs.
We rose as one. When he motioned for me to come closer, Jean-Luc's frown deepened.
Word has spread throughout the tower of your foul mood this morning, Captain Diggory.
I'm sorry, sir.
He waved a hand. Apologize not. Your toil is not in vain. We shall catch the witches, and we shall burn their pestilence from the earth.
He frowned slightly.
Last night was not your fault.
Jean-Luc's eyes flashed. But the Archbishop didn't notice.
I am required to attend a matinee performance this morning with one of the king's foreign dignitaries. Though I do not condone theater, for it is a vile practice befitting only vagrants and scoundrels, you will accompany me.
I wiped the sweat from my forehead.
Sir, it wasn't a request. Wash up. Be ready to leave within the hour.
Yes, sir.
The unnamed emotion in Jean-Luc's eyes bored into my back as I followed the Archbishop inside. It was only later, sitting in the carriage outside Soleil et Lune, that I allowed myself to name it, allowed myself to feel the bitter sting of regret. Our respect had once been mutual, but that was before the envy.
A mutually beneficial arrangement. Lou. By the time I woke the next morning, dusty rays of sunlight shone through the attic window. I blinked slowly, lost in the pleasant moment between sleeping and waking, where there is no memory. But my subconscious chased me. Noises reverberated from the theater below as cast and crew called to one another, and excited voices drifted in from the window. I frowned, still clinging to the remnants of sleep. The theater was rather noisy this morning. I lurched upright. Soleil et Lune performed a matinee every Saturday. How could I have forgotten? My face gave a particularly painful throb as I threw myself down on our bed. Oh, right, that's how. My nose had been smashed to bits, and I'd been forced to flee for my life. The noise downstairs heightened as the overture began. I groaned. Now I'd be stuck here until the performance was over, and I desperately needed to pee. Usually it wasn't a problem to sneak downstairs to the toilet before the cast and crew arrived, but I'd overslept. Climbing to my feet, wincing at the dull pain in my back, I assessed the damage quickly. My nose was definitely broken, and my fingers had swollen to twice their size overnight. But I wore a fine enough dress to pass by the patrons unnoticed, except for the bloodstains. I licked my good fingers and scrubbed at the stains furiously, but the fabric remained irrevocably red. With an impatient sigh, I glanced between the racks of dusty costumes and the trunk beside the bed I shared with Coco. Wool pants, scarves, mittens, and shawls spilled out of it, along with a couple of moldy blankets we'd found in the garbage last week. I touched Coco's side of the bed gingerly. I hoped she'd made it to her aunt safely. Shaking my head, I turned back to the rack of costumes and picked out an outfit at random. Coco could take care of herself. Me, on the other hand, I gave up trying to undress after three excruciating attempts. My broken fingers refused to work properly, and my body simply couldn't contort itself to reach the buttons between my shoulders. I plucked a bergère hat and wire spectacles from a nearby bin and put them on instead. Last night's velvet ribbons still hid my scar, and my cloak covered up the worst of the bloodstains. They would have to do. My bladder insisted on immediate relief, and I refused to pee in the corner like a dog. Besides, I could always pop Angelica's ring in my mouth if I needed to make a quick escape. I suspected the lobby would be too crowded to maneuver while invisible, or I would have foregone the disguise completely. Nothing roused suspicion like a specter stepping on one's toes. Tilting my hat over my face, I crept down the staircase that led backstage. Most of the actors ignored me, except, "You aren't supposed to be back here," a haughty, hook-nosed girl said. She had a round face and hair the color and texture of corn silk. When I turned toward her, she gasped. "Good Lord! What happened to your face?" "Nothing." I ducked my head hastily, but the damage was done. Her haughtiness transformed into concern as she crept closer. "Has someone hurt you? Should I call the constabulary?" "No, no." I flashed her an embarrassed smile. "Just lost my way to the toilet, that's all." "It's in the lobby." She narrowed her eyes at me. "Is that blood on your dress? Are you sure you're all right?" "Perfect." I nodded like a maniac. "Thanks." I walked away a little too quickly to appear innocent. Though I kept my head down, I could feel other eyes on me as I passed. My face must have looked truly ghastly. Perhaps Angelica's ring would have been wiser after all. The lobby was infinitely worse than backstage. Wealthy nobles and merchants who had yet to find their seats crowded around it. I kept to the outskirts of the room, angling toward the walls to avoid unwanted attention. Thankfully, the theatergoers were far too interested in each other to notice my skulking. Soleil et Lune was, after all, far more popular for its gossip than its plays. I overheard one couple whispering that the Archbishop himself would be attending this matinee, another excellent reason to return to the attic as soon as possible. As father of the chasseurs, the Archbishop guided their spiritual warfare against Belterra's evil, proclaiming he'd been given a mandate from God to eradicate the occult. He'd burned dozens of witches, more than any other. Yet still he didn't rest. I'd seen him only once, from afar, but I'd recognized the cruel light in his eye for what it was. Obsession. I ducked into the toilet before anyone else could notice me. After relieving myself, I tore the ridiculous hat from my head and stood in front of the mirror. It revealed at once why the crew had stared. My face was in shambles. Deep purple bruises had seeped beneath my eyes, and dried blood spattered my cheeks. I scrubbed at it with the cold water from the tap, rubbing my skin until it was pink and raw. It did little to improve the overall effect. A polite knock sounded on the door. "Sorry," I called sheepishly. "Stomach trouble." The knocking ceased immediately. The woman's shocked, disapproving mutters drifted through the door as she shuffled away. Good. I needed to wait out the crowd, and a locked toilet was as good a place as any. Frowning at my reflection, I set to working the blood from my dress. The voices outside gradually subsided as the music grew louder, signaling the start of the performance. Inching the door open, I peered into the lobby. Only three ushers remained. They nodded to me as I passed, oblivious to my bruised face in the dark. My breathing came easier as I neared the door to backstage. I was only a few steps away when an auditorium door opened behind me.
"May I be of assistance, sir?" an usher asked.
Whoever it was murmured an answer, and the hair on my neck stood up. I should have proceeded to the attic. I should have run. Every instinct screamed at me to flee, flee, flee. But I didn't. Instead, I peeked back at the man standing in the doorway. The very tall, copper-haired man in a blue coat.
"You," he said.
Before I could move, he pounced. His hands gripped my arms vice-like, and he flung me around, positioning himself in front of the exit. I knew immediately that no amount of struggling would free me. He was simply too strong, too big. There was only one way forward. I smashed my knees straight into his groin. He doubled over with a groan, grip loosening. Tearing free and throwing my hat at his face for good measure, I darted into the depths of the theater. There was another exit backstage. Crew members gaped as I sprinted past, knocking down crates and other props behind me as I went. When he caught the edge of my cloak, I ripped the fastening at my throat free, never faltering a step. It didn't matter. The chasseur still pounded after me, his strides nearly thrice my own. He latched onto my wrist as I spotted the hook-nosed girl from before. Though I thrashed away from him, my spectacles clattering to the floor as I struggled toward her, he only tightened his hold. Tears streamed down my ruined face. "Please help me!" The hook-nosed girl's eyes widened. "Let her go!" The voices on stage faltered at her shout, and we all froze. Shit. No, no, no. Taking advantage of his hesitation, I twisted to break free, but his hand inadvertently